Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
The winds of change are blowing. There's excitement in the air. Can you feel it? It's electric and magical. The happy train's on track. Because America is back!
Pulisic, the step over on the left foot, and it scores! Christian Pulisic switches to his right foot, into the penalty area, takes a deflection, but Christian Pulisic has his second goal of the game. He's taken the Premier League by storm here today, the American. Oh, the header comes in, goodness me, he's done it again! Christian Pulisic has a hat-trick!
And we're back! Caught offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan, Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Oh, man, Pulisic's perfect, kind of perfect hat-trick. And then the perfect news, the pick of Dest in E this morning as Sergiño Dest declares for the U.S. men's national team.
I'm honestly stunned. I feel like I owe everyone an apology because I've been saying for probably the better part of 2 months now, it's over, people. He's not choosing the U.S. Move on. I mean, maybe it was some sort of like defense mechanism for me protecting myself from that possibility.
Sure.
But I really believe there was no chance.
Also, you probably looked at it and you thought, well, Sergiño Dest is thinking, I can play with, you know, Virgil van Dijk, you know, De Ligt, all those guys. Or I can play with Walker Zimmerman and a guy from the MLS.
We'll never really know exactly why he chose what he chose. What if the real reason, I mean, we can speculate, but what if the real reason that he chose the U.S. is because, look, quite frankly, there's a better opportunity that I'll play there. Like, we might think so highly of him that he's a good enough player to start for the Dutch team.
I don't think so. I don't think that's the case. I said that our only hope, because it wouldn't, no disrespect, I was only joking with Walker Zimmerman and that. It was never going to be based on talent. It was going to be based on feelings. And that's exactly what he said it was. Did he, over the course, remember his youth experience, when the Dutch weren't looking at him, was with the US. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being in camps, meeting the guys, the familiarity of the whole thing. Think of him coming onto the field the other night. He like fist bumped with Christian Pulisic.
I know. You can tell that there does feel to be some kind of closeness.
A warmth.
And it's because, we've talked so many times on the show about this generation of American players. Like, they really are all coming up together. You see it happening in front of you between Pulisic and Adams and McKennie,
yeah.
You know, and now Dest. Like, there's clearly a wave of young talent, and he, you know, he is potentially getting caught up in that wave, and it's probably been fun. This group of guys that like feel like we are the future of
this
program.
And also, I think in international football, a lot of decisions are made with, you know, with the heart and with the feelings, and not necessarily with marketing or the head in or your future career. Because, like, again, I go back to the Declan Rice decision. He was very happy to play for the Republic of Ireland. It meant a lot to him and his family until he wasn't, and discovered that, you know, he discovered that magical summer of 2018. I'm convinced that what the English team did at the World Cup changed his mind. And I think that the feeling that Sergiño Dest got from being part of all those U.S. youth camps was the deciding factor for him.
Don't you wish that, like, I'm so used to stories like this being in more relation to college sports. And when I hear that, like, this would be the example of someone choosing to play at, like, Wichita State over Duke.
I've chosen Wake Forest.
Like, I want to believe that this is as simple as, like, a bag of cash was left in, like, a bookshelf in a library and Dest went to pick it up. Like, that's like the very like NCAA way of thinking about
this. Could somebody have said, you know, it's possible that you know, an agent said to him, look, at the Dutch, what, there's 20 million people in Holland. There's 300 and something million. There's an untapped potential there in the United States for you as a marketing entity. Being big on the U.S. men's national team is pretty, it's huge. It's enormous. And maybe that factored into it too. If you want to be cynical,
I actually don't believe that.
I don't believe it either. We've actually got what he said.
We have. Now he'll be speaking in Dutch. However, thankfully, we've brought in Champions League man,
Champions League magazine voice man.
So he'll be here to read the English translation of what Dest is saying.
Yeah, and basically this section begins with Dest being asked, what are the advantages of playing for Team USA rather than playing for the Dutch?
Yeah, America. Ik heb daar gewoon
Team USA. I have played there throughout all youth teams.
Ja, ze hebben me goed opgepakt. And yeah.
And they have embraced me from an early age on.
Speel je met de beste spelers van de wereld.
In the Netherlands, you would play amongst the best players in the world.
Dat is ook echt heel
they have a great team. That would have been amazing.
Uiteindelijk was het gewoon mijn gevoel dat
but in the end, it was a decision based on feelings and emotions. And therefore, I chose Team USA.
Unbelievable.
Feelings and emotions for the win.
And I'm trying to think now of what it actually means for them. Because we've, like, what does it mean for, like, what does it mean for DeAndre Yedlin?
It might not mean anything. It might mean that, so first of all, Ajax are very aware of his defensive frailties, not DeAndre Yedlin's, but Sergiño Dest's.
Yes.
And they're quite happy to indulge them because, as you can see, going forward, he is quite the player. And if you plug that into maybe a US scenario, he could play as a wide midfielder. He's skillful enough. We've seen him take players on and beat them. He could be let off the leash for the US rather than trying to front up Tecatito and not do so well.
Well, that's
albeit on the left-hand side. He's out of his natural position.
Yeah, and look, I don't want to have to, like, this is a happy time. We're supposed to be talking about happy things. However, moments like that do show you he is not a finished product yet.
No,
like,
but
this doesn't mean we just won the World Cup.
No, but I was trying to say to you off air and you shot me down. I heard a debate yesterday on Sky Sports about Trent Alexander-Arnold, and Gary Neville was saying he needs to work on the defensive side of his game, but he is one of possibly the top two fullbacks in the world. And when you see what Trent Alexander-Arnold does in that fullback position and the importance of the fullback position in the modern game and having a talented wide player, because I actually don't think Trent Alexander-Arnold is a fullback in any traditional sense whatsoever. And I don't think Sergiño Dest is either. So you've got this option, Andrew, this creative outlet in a wide area that we did not have before. And now we have it, and we should be very pleased about that. Now, I hear the naysayers shout, what does it matter if you've got a manager who you don't have faith in to implement him and to use him in the right way? Take the point. I understand there are the Bearhalter doubters, but in terms of talent pool, we've just got a lot better. Trust me.
Yeah. Now, look, if you want to compare him to Trent Alexander-Arnold, we're going to have to see that he can play in a ball the same way that he does.
Correct.
But your point is well taken in that with Liverpool, you know, I almost don't even look at the fullback position as a defensive one.
No.
And so, you know, maybe this is some sort of movement in that direction now that the U.S. has a player with that sort of creative quality to him in attack, that maybe they can do the same.
I just think it gives us such options. He's a talented player. What are we always saying? We want our best players playing at the highest level possible, getting the most amount of minutes. And there's some boxes ticked here this morning by that. Now, I hope there is no vindictive response from the Dutch. I doubt there should be. I don't think there are people.
Oh, how horribly unfair and cruel that would be.
Well, we know what football fans are like. I don't expect there to be, though, because he has.
Oh, you mean from the fans? I thought you meant like Ajax are going to sit him now.
No, I don't think they'll do a Perugia on that South Korean player. Yeah,
right?
I don't think they'll do that. But I mean, that's wild. I'm just saying that I hope there's, and I expect there to be an understanding. This guy has come up through our system. He's declared for us now. He's given his reasons, and it's really good. That's all I can say.
What an incredibly pleasant surprise it was to find that out this morning.
And I was the one that gave you the news.
Yeah, you texted me. You said, I'm here and I come with amazing news. And I start guessing. I didn't want you to tell me. I start launching into these guesses.
Yeah.
That I took it to very deep and personal places when in fact it had just something to do with soccer.
Right.
Still important.
Which is deep and personal to me.
That's true. Oh, so great. And we haven't even, like, the whole thing that we started with was supposed to be Christian Pulisic. What a weekend this was for American soccer.
America's back, baby.
You heard it at the start. Christian Pulisic, the first hat trick in the Premier League for an American since?
Clint Dempsey for Fulham.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't give you the date. I can't give you the time. Can't give you the game.
But it happened.
Yes.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
What a performance.
Yes. I thought, okay, here's me being, allow me to be not, this isn't smug, JJ, but, and it certainly isn't I told you so, JJ, but he has been playing well.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, a goal was missing from it, and he got it. The first goal, he's been doing what he's been doing all along. Driving at defenders, step over, takes it past one, and drives it home. Nice finish through the legs of the Burnley defenders to the bottom corner. The same thing. Turnover, picks up the ball, drives at the goal again. Deflection means that when people are going around calling it a perfect hat trick, I'm a little, but it's a left foot, right foot combo for, and the second goal is with his right foot. And then the header is just one of those where you get your head on it and you hope for the best and it flies into the net.
It was amazing.
It was amazing.
And by the way, for all the soccer we've seen him play, we don't see him do that.
No.
Where did that come from?
Well, we watch him a lot for the US men's national team, and as somebody pointed out on Twitter, you know, we haven't been a pressing side. So for the second goal, the turnover that leads to it just isn't happening for the US, right? And for headers, that was a well-worked kind of, well, what, it was a corner that came back,
right,
and somebody lost him, basically, because it wasn't straight from the corner. But, yeah, brilliant. But he's been doing this and he's deserved his spot. Now, the narrative has emerged that Lampard is the architect. He knew. Frankie knew. And he handled him perfectly. I'm wondering what your take is on that.
How Frank has handled this situation?
Like that, no, but that.
Well, I will tell you this, that I, so for everything that we've said about Pulisic's handling at Chelsea, I hope that people haven't interpreted that from us to be, oh, he's an American, that's why they're doing him like this. Like, that has not been.
That's not what we said.
That has not been our take on this. I don't think his nationality has anything to do with it. I only responded the way that I did, kind of a somewhat opposed to the Craig Burley comment that we played for you a couple weeks ago. I was somewhat opposed to that, not because I thought this was an American freakout happening. I really thought that there were moments that we've seen from Pulisic that justified more of an inclusion in the squad, and that combined with a $72 million price tag, it just seemed like this is normally a situation where a player like that would be playing. And in hindsight, how wrong were we? Like, we were off by a couple weeks. Lampard eventually realized, like, whether he realized it or just saw enough from Pulisic that he thought he should be playing, like, a couple weeks later, that is now happening, and I imagine Pulisic will probably be a mainstay in their lineup for at least the foreseeable future.
Here's how I see it, because a lot of people saying that it's like some kind of masterstroke, Lampard leaving him out to coax the best out of him. I'm not buying that at all. This is what happened. Lampard comes in. He looks at what he has. One of the first signings he makes is to secure Mason Mount, a guy he's already had on his team. And he's shuffled his pack. He's brought guys in. Don't forget, Michy Batshuayi was in the cold also. He had a look at Pulisic early on. He thought, okay, fine. He shuffled the deck. He had another look at Pulisic. He gets back in because his performances merited it. September saw Pulisic go with not a single minute for Chelsea in the league. Like, not a single minute. So if you're trying to integrate a player coming in from the cold, you give him gradual minutes, sure. You don't suddenly freeze him out for the length of time he did. So, like, that mitigates against me thinking that Lampard has just pulled off this brilliant kind of got inside his head tactic. It's worked out well. But Pulisic has deserved it. And honestly, like I said, Sheffield United at home was the one game where I felt he wasn't in the game at all. Norwich, if you watch that game back again, he did a lot of good things in that game too. You know, he didn't get a run against Wolves. He was very good in the Super Cup against Liverpool. Fast forward, the last week, the last 10 days, Newcastle at home, Ajax away, and then the start against Burnley. He's earned it.
I actually will go a little bit easier on Frank than you in this situation. We don't see what he is seeing at training.
That is true.
So we don't know what sort of instruction Lampard is trying to push upon Pulisic in getting him to track back and help out in defending more and things like that, because in trying to be more physical. Like, these are things Lampard has talked about, and we don't know, you know, the manner in which he's trying to impose those lessons upon this really young,
sure,
relatively unproven talent. So, you know, I do feel like I should defer to him a little bit in trying to judge whether or not this player should have been playing.
I think what he said post-match was interesting, and maybe even a little bit instructive.
From my point of view, and I'm delighted to see him do that today, because I know the backstory, I know the pressures of a move like that. I also know he played for his country through the summer and had 1 week break this summer, so came back after all that. Then you get the pressure of, can you settle in the Premier League? So I've tried to deal with it in the way I see best, which is to give him minutes. He's played games this season already. But I've also got competition in that area, and I need them all on edge. I need them all trying to perform when they get in the team and play. And Christian's been doing that recently, been doing it from the bench. Fully deserved his start today, and was a fantastic match-winning performance.
So it's no reflection on him. It's just been the competition's been so fierce that he's not really been able to force his way in.
Yeah, no, I know what a good player is. I see that close hand. There are things, obviously, that he has to learn and improve because he's just turned 21, and it's the same as all the other young players. So there are things that he's going to work on, and I think, you know, he certainly knows that, and he certainly knows that I'm driving that daily in training, and the way he's trained in the last few weeks and the impact he's had when he's been playing has said to everyone here I am, and what talent he does have. So I'm really pleased with him today. That's what we need. It's what we need from all our attacking players, to be a threat, to play like that, to have a ruthless edge about how they finish, and he showed the full package today.
Certainly did.
Yep, great performance, and I didn't honestly think I would have seen Burnley taken apart like that at home. So if you look at it in terms of an overall Chelsea performance, that was really, really good, albeit the two goals that they gave up towards the end.
You actually handled the rundown responsibility for this show, and you wrote something on it where if I had written this sentence,
I was trying to channel you.
I cannot even begin to imagine the mockery that you would lay down upon me. You said, was this a watershed moment for both Pulisic and U.S. soccer? Now, for Pulisic, it might be.
A lot of people trying to paint it as a huge moment for U.S. soccer.
Well, I'll say this. When the first goal went in, let alone the hat trick, the first goal went in and I stood up, I walked over to the window, I opened it, and I absolutely screamed at the top of my lungs.
You like me!
It's one of the all-time great moments that has occurred. So
sure.
I understand where you're coming. In fact, I kind of, at some point on the show, it doesn't have to be now, but I wanted to try to think of like the top three you like me moments in the history of U.S. soccer. Because I think this goes into it. Might even be number one.
Oh, Clint Dempsey's goal against Juventus has to be.
Okay, that's a good call. I was wondering if maybe Tim Howard, when he scored for Everton.
No. Number three is Dempsey's goal against Juventus. Possibly even number two, whatever. Number two, Landon Donovan's loan period at Everton.
Yeah,
he's actually good. He's actually really good.
You're right. It did feel like it was like for years we've been saying he's the best American player, but no one wanted to believe it because he wasn't doing it in Europe. And then he came over and
was really good.
I'm trying to think if there was anything Brian McBride did that really stood out. I mean, Brad Friedel's whole career.
Yeah, that would be a big long you like me moment. And now Pulisic.
But to call it watershed.
It's too much.
Well, it's too soon.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe at the end of the year, we'll look back on it and Pulisic will go on to have this season of, you know, 8 assists, 10 goals, something like that, and lead Chelsea to a top 4 appearance and a place and be one of their best players. And maybe we will say that was the day where it all turned for him and indeed the country.
We should give away a jersey now.
So we've been running this contest since before the season started.
For our fifth year of Caught Offside, we thought we'd give away something nice.
Right. JJ, because he's petty, went out and got a Christian Pulisic Borussia Dortmund jersey, not a Chelsea jersey.
I got it from classicfootballshirts.co.uk, who kindly gave it to us because they liked the idea.
Yeah. And so we had the contest basically has been running where we had you all guessing what minute in what game he would score his first goal. And in fact, multiple people were within 1 minute of it. Now, thankfully, we prepared for that eventuality, which was pointed out to us by the winner.
The winner has to be the winner just to avoid legal ramifications. This guy has been quite the pain since it became clear he'd won the jersey. And he's very much a kind of, I want to speak to the manager kind of guy. So, Gregory Marshall. Congratulations. We'll be sliding into your DMs for an address. You win a 17-18 Christian Pulisic Dortmund jersey. Enjoy it.
Right. For those wondering, for the other people who were within 1 minute wondering, whoa, what's the tiebreaker? The tiebreaker was whoever had made their submission first in the event that there were multiple people who were the same number of minutes off from when the goal occurred.
Yeah.
And so Gregory had done that. So thank you,
not
everyone.
Not just done it, noted the rules on the podcast, forwarded them to his lawyer, Saul Goodman, and now we're bound by legal obligations to give him the jersey.
So yes, thank you to everybody who did take part.
Yes,
now
absolutely.
We know maybe this is a thing that we'll want to do again.
Yeah, sure. So, next time we'll even get it signed.
Well, no, by the player or by us?
By the player.
Oh.
Although people have been looking for signed merchandise from us just this weekend. It's not even a joke. I'm getting text messages from people. Have you any signed stuff? We got nada. Got to figure it out.
First of all, I don't know how to write in cursive. It makes
don't send us scarves anyway. Because we ruined someone's scarf.
But yeah, what a last 48 hours this has been for American soccer. I can only believe that there is more greatness on the horizon. Thank you, Sergino Dest and Christian Pulisic, for restoring my faith in this sport, in this country. We will talk more American soccer later in the podcast. MLS, we have our semifinals. We have to talk about Bob Bradley. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But first, JJ, there was actually, in addition to Pulisic's hat trick, which really stole the headlines, the caught offside cup happened. I'm so happy right now talking about Dest and Pulisic. Do we have to even analyze this game?
Yeah, we do. We got to talk about it.
This was every Liverpool-Tottenham game since you and I started doing this podcast, with the exception of like one or two.
There's been some hammerings for you. There's been a hammering for us at Wembley. And this is in a pattern now. It's similar to the 2-1 last season.
Tottenham could have gone up 7-0 in this game. And every part of me always believed Liverpool would have found a way to get 8.
Mm.
That's just the nature of how things are right now. Not just like table wise where these clubs lie, but just when they play against one another. Like, so Tottenham score in the opening minute, which was incredible.
Yeah. A very good goal, I think.
And then they just kind of receded into Tottenham v Man City from earlier this season, where we are just going to spend the next 89 minutes defending for our lives. And you can't, they almost did, but you just, when your defenders are players like Serge Aurier, you can't do that. You cannot rely on players like that being able to hold up to that level of relentlessness from Liverpool over the course of that length of time. They're going to crack.
Yes, and to give Potch his due, the early goal set the tone for what Spurs were probably going to do anyway, which was defend deep and try to catch Liverpool on the break. And they had a couple of moments where they actually knitted together some nice breakaways and, you know, Son could have had a second.
Well, we'll talk about that in a sec.
But anyway, you fell back, you fell deep, and it was a case of, right, what can Liverpool do? How do we break you down? And for a while, Andrew, you cut off a lot of the passing lanes. Liverpool couldn't get the ball to Firmino. They couldn't really create a lot, but you knew eventually that the dam was going to break.
Well, there were so many moments over the course of this game where I was thinking to myself, like, here it comes.
Right.
And sure enough, in a couple of those, it did, because the pressure just becomes overwhelming. And look, I'll give Gazzaniga a ton of credit in net for Hugo Lloris. He was fantastic. Now, I will say it was a little bit of like the way you talk about Tim Howard against Belgium.
Shots at him.
It's a little bit of how I felt about Gazzaniga's performance. That's somewhat unfair because he had the shot to the corner that he went full extension to knock away and then made the double save. Mm-hmm. That was brilliant. And then he had early in the second half the Firmino header from point blank range.
That was a super.
Another one where.
I think that was Virgil van Dijk, was it not?
I thought it was Firmino.
But he made a save from Van Dijk as well.
And then he tipped a Van Dijk header over the bar, free header from Van Dijk. He also had one from Firmino where Davinson Sanchez just basically stopped playing, allowed Firmino to go in behind him and fire one from a kind of impossible angle, but still one that you could see rattling off a keeper and going in. But, you know, a lot of the saves, I did feel like on a different day, if Liverpool shoots that ball three feet in another direction, they win that game 6-1.
Yeah.
It was just that kind of game. And Tottenham, I give Pochettino credit for one thing, and this is a thing that the Liverpool supporters certainly picked up on. Pochettino clearly told them, you are going to go out there and be bastards in this game. You are going to bother Liverpool. You're going to be physical. You're going to be annoying. Mm. You're going to do all the dark art type stuff that isn't necessarily always associated with a club like Tottenham. You know, like how many times did Son just park himself in front of a free kick so as to not allow like that patented early, quick free kick?
How many times did Gazzaniga pretend he was going short, then launch one over to left back to try and win a flick on to get in behind, sorry, not left back, the left-sided, right-sided Liverpool defensive position to try and put Trent Alexander-Arnold out of position, which...
On one occasion he did.
Yes.
And Son went in, got around the keeper, really difficult angle, fired one off the crossbar. It's not a sure thing that he should have scored. But I'll tell you this, I've seen him score tougher ones. I mean, your son, you're one of the best players in the league. It's against Liverpool at Anfield, and you have this chance to put them up 2-0. The keeper is not in the net. Like, I don't know if it's too harsh to say it, but you kind of have to score.
I know what
and
you I know what you mean.
Killer,
it was a tight angle.
When it happened,
he hit the frame, you know.
I know when it happened, I just remember thinking, "Uh-oh." Like that was Liverpool's sigh of relief moment. It was to me the same exact feeling I felt a year ago when Sissoko went in on the keeper one-on-one and fired one basically out of the stadium. Like it was the same kind of feeling of that was our moment. It just went by the wayside and we are 100% going to
now,
regret that.
You were 20 times better last April or March when we played you in that 2-1. I mean, I know Liverpool scraped that one with the mistake by Lloris, but in terms of general play, Spurs were so much better in that game than this one. They definitely were not retreated into the shell that they were at the weekend. You know, it just had that, even I felt it, that inevitability about it, but also we got to give Liverpool credit here. I'm always loath to do it because there are, you know, when you're in a championship or a title race and, you know, you're winning as many games as Liverpool are winning and you're as long unbeaten at home as they are, there is a huge element of luck. There's also a huge element of what Klopp talks about, mentality. Mentality monsters. You can't deny that Liverpool, particularly at Anfield, are not going to be rolled over by anyone and adversity will be overcome. They will find a way to win, whether it's some clever, skillful play, or whether it's Mane being very, very astute in the box and knowing that Serge Aurier is going to flail wildly at you.
It's a penalty. It's a penalty.
We had guys on Instagram. I couldn't believe it. And I refused to do it because it was so obvious. But at one point I was almost like, dude, have you ever been to a game or watched a game before? Like, it's such a penalty.
By the way, it's not all that much different than what happened to Lamella at Anfield a couple years ago when he had the back of his leg kicked out, and a penalty was awarded.
I don't recall, but
yeah, I mean, remember the 2-2, the Wanyama goal.
Oh, yeah.
In that game, late, Lamella had his leg kicked and Kane scored the penalty and it ended 2-2.
But
it felt similar to me on that. Like, Tottenham fans can cry about it all they want, but if that happened to one of their players, they'd be screaming for
sorry,
it to be given.
It really wasn't even Tottenham fans. It was other fans who were like, Liverpool are always getting something.
Well, that is true. Stuff just, fortuitous things do, like, had to be Aurier who in that.
Yeah, and it had to be all Brighton then for Leicester. I mean, come
on. It's always something. It's always a thing.
Yeah, but that's because Liverpool are a positive team who keep going to the end.
I know, luck is the residue of design.
And put themselves in position to be the beneficiaries of Lady Luck and her wondrous bosoms.
Look, you guys deserve to win that game. There's had that ended in a draw or even a Tottenham win, we would have come on here today saying, how did that happen? I can only be frustrated about it in that it was there for, you know, even after Son's missed chance late on, Alderweireld had a free header. Danny Rose had the opportunity where he cut in and just, I don't know, it won so poorly. I guess those are the things that I'm talking about is for us, it's Danny Rose who finds himself in that position. For you guys, that would have been Salah and he would have scored. It's just one of those things.
Oh, poor Andy is so down on
himself. I need sympathy. I need people to feel sorry for me. I need your pity. I thrive on others' pity. For Tottenham, they're now 11th in the table. This is the first time they have been lower half in the league table since 2014. Good Lord.
Yeah. I will say Pochettino's decision to reinstate Eriksen into the lineup and reinstate Alderweireld into the lineup, that wasn't expected. And Eriksen didn't play terribly well. He wasn't terribly effective, although I think his effectiveness was curbed by the fact often he found himself in a right fullback or right inside right position. But it was Roy Keane on Sky Sports who reserved the most amount of his ire for your fullbacks, Danny Rose and Serge Aurier.
I don't know. Rose, I won't really go off on anything with him, but Aurier, I just don't understand how Ben Davis can't be playing instead of him. Mm. Like, why does it have to be Serge Aurier? There just has to be
another
option.
There's a better configuration of that back line that doesn't include Aurier, I think. But anyways.
I mean, do you go back three with Sanchez, Vertonghen, and
I don't like that because I just think it creates too much space and channels, and they're going to get pulled out of position.
Or he has moments where he's a good player, but like that moment that you saw yesterday, it's going to happen in every game. It's just a matter of whether or not it happens in the box. Like he's that waiting to happen. We've said that since he arrived there. But last note on Liverpool, a couple other guys that I did want to give credit to who don't always necessarily get it. I think Fabinho is fantastic.
Yeah.
I wonder if there is any kind of like stats out there that you could find on just like his 50-50 balls, like how many of them he wins.
It reminds me a bit of when Mascherano was in his pomp for Liverpool, winning those tackles and setting. He also sets tempo better than any of the other options in that position for Liverpool. He's playing extremely well. Jordan Henderson, to be fair, took his goal very well. And it wasn't a perfect performance from him, but man, he just keeps sticking in there. He is such a warrior. He just keeps going and trying to do the right things. And look, there was a guy beside me. I was watching it in the Monroe Bar in Brooklyn, tearing his hair out with Henderson before the goal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm like, you know what he's giving you here. Why are you doing this?
I think fans sometimes throw rational thought out the window and they just decide that there's going to be a player on this team that I'm just going to take my anger out on.
Yeah. I just think when you've seen what Henderson has given the club over the last 24 months, even longer than that, you've got to curb the impulse to have a go at him in the way that you did prior to May.
Yeah.
You know, May should have changed things for you when he lifted the sixth.
Right, yeah,
it should have changed things for you.
Yeah, you're right. And I also wanted to say about Mo Salah, but he scores again against Tottenham, which is, I think, what is that, 7 in 9, I think he has against them. It's just like...
And it wasn't even that great of a penalty.
No, it really wasn't. If Gazzaniga moved just like an inch, I think Gazzaniga was waiting for the Panenka, and he was going to catch it. That he was waiting for his moment to shine. But the thing about Salah, I wanted to say, look, for all the frustration that he sometimes provides Liverpool fans, and you saw it in the one moment in this game, he kind of fired one from like 20 yards out when maybe he could have played in Firmino.
That's right, to the left, yeah.
He's going to do that. But I'll say this. I remember I'm watching the game. I forget what minute it is. Some, like, I don't know, mid-70s or something like that. And Liverpool have just been go, go, go from minute one. And it's like in the mid-70s, and Salah is still, like, he's still high-pressing almost by himself. He's flying from, like, the right side to the left side back to the keeper to try to challenge it on guys. Like, there's no quit in him. There's just no off button.
No.
And it makes him, like, for whatever frustration he provides, I can tell you as a fan of an opposing team, you hate playing against him because he just wreaks havoc all over the place. So, like, I don't know. I'll just never fall on the side of those who have had it with him. I just don't. I have to believe that that's such a small minority that it's almost not even worth, like, dedicating the attention to it that we do.
I would agree with that.
Couple other things from the Premier League over the weekend that I do want to discuss before we move on. Arsenal. What a bad day it was for North London clubs.
Let's get this one out of the way. The VAR decision to reverse the goal. Let's get that out of the way. I don't understand what was going on there. I did not see a foul. It's absolutely ridiculous. I thought VAR wasn't going to re-referee these things. Nonsense.
Yeah, that changed this weekend a little bit. And I could see managers probably losing their minds over that.
There is not been, whatever you think about VAR, whether you're in my camp and you see it as the downfall of football, or you're in the other camp, there's got to be even application of it. But the main talking point was this.
Some Arsenal fans actually cheering as they take off their captain, Granit Xhaka, who looks rather unimpressed by being hauled off at this stage. He's going to be replaced by Bukayo Saka. He started the last 4 Premier League games. And Xhaka's reaction there, not good. Not good at all, as he's virtually jeered off by his own fans. The shirt comes off. And Xhaka is away down the tunnel, booed by the Arsenal fans.
Wow.
That's your captain?
That's your captain. First of all, and I kept saying it to Arsenal fans online who were like, you know, trying to go have a go at Emery and trying to have a go at Xhaka. You shouldn't jeer one of your own. I do feel there's often a sense of, when a guy's having a bad game, there's a sense of relief around the stadium. You hear a gasp or like a satisfied sigh when a guy goes off. But he was jeered. But before he reacted, He was jeered and cheered because the substitution was happening. That's your captain. Yeah. The way he reacts, though.
It's kind of, and you're right, he's probably angry before any of this. Like, he's going off for a reason. He's not playing a great game. He understands the criticism around him. Maybe he feels the weight of that captaincy.
And it's been building, let's be honest.
Right. But, like, I mean, just one of the responsibilities of being captain is, even in a moment like that, jog off the field. The game is tied.
And there's clap even.
Yeah. There's 30 minutes to go. Like, get off the field. Don't let your bad mood and your anger with the fan base get the best of you and trudge off like a petulant child, and then put your, and then like egg the crowd on, putting your hand to your ear, waving, you know, waving for more. Like, it was.
Can we talk about Arsenal though?
Taking your jersey off, walking straight down the tunnel.
Can I ask you something? As a Spurs fan and as an Eagles fan, so when people talk about the New York football giants, they talk about class, they talk about tradition, they talk about history, and you hate that because you don't think really it stands up. Okay? Same things with Arsenal. The marble halls of Highbury, Herbert Chapman, turning up in blazers all the time, the George Graham years where you had to have your tie and blazer to all home and away games. There's a certain, even the Art Deco stands they had at Highbury, there's an old world class to this team.
Yeah.
We can dispense with that.
Nonsense.
We can dispense with that after mm-hmm. that reaction.
Oh, yeah. We probably didn't even need to wait for a moment like this. Like,
I know. But it yeah. just felt like this is not your grandfather, your great grandfather's Arsenal.
No, whatever. Like, whatever negative feelings were supposed to be ushered out the door when Wenger left, they're all still there.
Yeah, they really are.
Nothing's changed. And that's not, I'm not saying that's Emery's fault. The team is what it is. Like, these aren't all necessarily his players. I don't know. They, like, I don't know what people expected if there was going to be some overnight.
I would say to Arsenal fans, though, you know, Emery put it to the players to pick the captain, and they unanimously picked Xhaka. Actually, I don't know that it was unanimous, but they picked him. Lucas Torreira was crying at what happened. There's pictures of him wiping tears from his eyes because he was so upset by the vision of the captain being treated this way and his teammate.
I didn't see that. Wow, yeah. That's actually amazing.
Yeah, that happened. There's pictures from, they're up on Sky Sports on Instagram if you want to look at them.
He might be a great guy.
But also, he doesn't pick himself, and nor did he pick himself to be captain. Do you know what I mean? I do think Arsenal fans have to realise this guy is not going out week in, week out to sabotage your team. Now, do I think there's a better configuration of the Arsenal midfield that you can pick with Torreira and Guendouzi, who Guendouzi by a measure is their best player in terms of midfield? Yeah, there is. But again, Granit Xhaka is not CEO player manager. It's Unai Emery.
Right. That's a great point. It was ugly, though. All the fact that, like, forgetting for a second that they threw away a 2-goal lead at home against Crystal Palace, who, by the way, should be feeling pretty good about themselves right now.
That's a great point.
They're up to 6th in the table, Crystal Palace. This was a team that we did not think much of coming into the season. First off, we thought Zaha was gone.
Mm.
He's still there. Now, whether or not he actually wants to be, I don't know. But they really didn't do anything else.
Martin Atkinson had a nice use of VAR in reversing a yellow card and a dive against Zaha and giving the penalty.
Yep.
That was pretty good. Nice to see.
I thought so too. And I remember before the season being like, you know, their big move was to bring in Jordan Ayew, but he's scoring a goal yesterday.
Yeah.
He's like,
now we might wait many months for his next one, but still.
I'm just saying, like, of all the things, I forget who the listener was last year that went back and found the one thing that I was really wrong about in my preseason predictions Fabianski. Like, I'll save everybody the trouble right now. Maybe things will change, but at this moment, I'll tell all of you, I've never been so wrong about anything as I was with Crystal Palace. I think I might have even had them going down.
I said I couldn't watch, after they lost away to Sheffield United, which would have been their opening game of the season, I think. I said I couldn't watch them again. It was so bad. Take it back.
It's been an amazing turnaround for sure. A couple other ones quickly. Everton, JJ, that was horrifying. I happened to be with a few of our really close friends who are all Everton supporters, and we watched that game together, and just like the goal, the own goal goes in, and it's just this like quiet acceptance. They like, I really feel like they're just so beaten down that like that moment, it was almost as though they expected it. I felt bad for them, especially on the heels of another kind of bizarre overturn of a penalty decision, which I was pretty shocked was overturned.
Which was the Connolly incident, was it?
Yeah,
Yeah, so he clearly steps on his foot, but it's completely, like, accidental. It's not a play on the ball. He just steps on him. Now, I guess letter of the law, that's a penalty, but I thought it was very harsh. I thought it was very harsh. And I thought we're not re-refereeing these things.
Well, that's it. Is maybe...
It's not clear and obvious.
Like, right, maybe it is a penalty, but just a certain... Like, we had kind of been led to believe that there was a certain standard that you needed to cross in order for it to be overturned, and I just don't really know of anyone who thought that was enough to do it.
Yeah, it's this wild oscillation week to week. First of all, we're not re-refereeing things. Now we are. The bar is so high. Now it's so low. Like, come on.
Yeah.
I would scrap it than have this kind of system.
The final goal, though, it's unfortunate because Everton, it's tied 2-2, and you know Everton, they're trying to build some positive momentum. Like, this season has not gone well at all. Marco Silva's job could potentially be in jeopardy. And you can see how desperately they wanted that win coming on the heels of that penalty decision. And they're really, in stoppage time, they're really going for it. I mean, they're pushing like everybody forward. And I remember saying out loud, like, it looked like Everton had a moment. And then before the goal happened, they lost possession. And I remember actually saying, uh-oh, because they had so many guys forward, you knew this could, like, there's a real possibility that there's just not enough bodies back there. And as the camera pans out, you see it's kind of like a two-on-two break.
Yeah.
And it's Digne who's trailing the play. And sure enough, he isn't able to get back in time. And he knocks the ball perfectly into his own net. And it was just like you could see it transpiring.
And you look at Silva, and he has tried to change things. Sigurdsson has been dropped to the bench. Bernard comes in. What happens? Bernard gets an injury. Tom Davies starting in the midfield. Did well against West Ham. Dropped his captain for Sidibe. Dropped Seamus Coleman. Like, he has tried to shuffle the pack and make things better.
Yeah.
And they can't get out of their own way. By the way, your text to me about Jordan Pickford.
Oh, he's what's going on?
Not that good. The free kick, first of all, was belted, but he
completely missed it, though.
Missed it.
It didn't look like he was really being screened.
No.
I mean, yeah, it was hit hard, but it was hit at him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And then he had another moment later.
Flapped at one.
Yeah.
I got lucky with it. Look, I think his kicking is very good, but he's not.
It's not really what he's paid to do.
No, I guess not.
And then quickly before we get out, JJ, I don't really have much to say about Manchester United.
No, except I would say that it's an even to follow up the Liverpool result with a good away win. And I know Norwich are completely off the ball now from what we saw at the start of the season. I get that. But this is the kind of game United aren't winning in the last period of OGS's reign. So to get a win is very good. VAR controversy, obviously. Two missed penalties, not great. But to win the game fairly emphatically, that's a good result for United. And I suppose before we get out, we have to talk about Friday night's game very, very quickly.
That was unbelievable. I couldn't even believe what I was witnessing as it was happening.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about this. Ralf Hasenhüttl apologised for the 9-0 defeat at home. I don't know how a team can be play as poorly as that. It was Jamie Carragher said afterwards, Sky had the coverage, he called the players disgraceful, kind of suggested some of them stop playing.
I mean, I know that there was a red card in the 12th minute, but...
Yeah,
but
even still, that often galvanizes a team into a more defensive formation, and they can keep a team out. But there was just no chance of this. It was horrifying on a horrifying night. It equals the record win. It's the record away win, obviously, in Premier League history. It equals the record win overall, which was Manchester United versus Ipswich 9-0 in 1995, but Liverpool did the same prior to the Premier League in 89, at the start of the 89-90 season against Crystal Palace. That was 9-0. Do you know who holds the record for the top flight in England, Premier League and First Division included? For the record win, the top most amount of goals scored in a win.
Spurs?
Record win in the top division is 12-0. It's a joint record. West Brom beat Darwin, who no longer exists, 12-0 in the... It was on April 4th, 1892, and the Nottingham Forest beat Leicester, then known as Leicester Fosse, 12-0, First Division, 21st of March, 1909.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Arlo White gave us a bit of knowledge on that one. The Leicester players had a teammate who got married the night before the Nottingham Forest game, so they were out drinking the day beforehand. And it was a derby game, and Forest hammered them 12-0.
It's unacceptable.
It is unacceptable, and
I do want to say, not just making this about Southampton and how pathetic it was by them. Look, 9-0, I don't care who's playing. It's a fluke to a certain extent. But Leicester, like, I can't say I'm shocked that they're capable of doing something like that.
Well, it's boosted their expected goals hugely because
their goal differential is now better than Liverpool's.
Now, they were struggling, strangely, they were struggling to create chances. That was the stat I read out last week, and that was confirmed to me by a listener. They were struggling in the chance creation department, which seems bizarre considering their form. So this this game is definitely an outlier, but are Leicester City good? Yes.
Well, what I'm saying is, in a year of total uncertainty after the top two, it should be a surprise to no one right now that Leicester are third. I think that they belong in that spot. They've proven that they are going to contend for a top four place, and that's like that. Everyone should just accept that now. I don't sense any real fall off coming from them. I'll tell you what. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I know the MLS postseason games were kind of like almost a week ago now, but we do want to give at least a couple thoughts on them.
We didn't get to talk about Atlanta, right, and we didn't get to talk about LAFC and the LA Galaxy.
Yeah, so don't go anywhere. We got all that and more.
People have asked questions about Carlos Vela in big games. What can you say about his performance this evening?
Who asked those questions?
Over the course of his career, those questions have been asked.
Have they been asked this year?
How many big games have you had this year?
That question.
I think it's a fair question. His performance tonight.
For this season, get lost. Get lost.
Oh, Breaking Bob.
Wow.
Seb Salazar has broken Bob Bradley. That was incredible. What an exchange.
I watched it live, and my opinion hasn't really changed from then to now. There was nothing really wrong with that question.
No. And it was a layup.
Right.
It was a layup question to be effusive about your player. Oh, well, I think he answered any questions tonight, Seb. I thought he was absolutely brilliant, magnificent. And, hey, this is the biggest game we've had this year. And you can't question his performance tonight. Absolutely wonderful. Out.
I thought the same
thing. Why he reacted that way was curious. And also, Seb tweeted out afterwards notes he had taken from an interview in January with Bob Bradley.
I just pulled it up. That's what I was doing when you thought I was probably ignoring you. I was looking for it.
Can you read that?
So this is, Seb went back, credit to him, he was not going to take this lying down. This was from January 14th of this year. He tweeted, Seb tweeted, most intrigued by Bob Bradley's comments on Carlos Vela. Bradley seems to want more out of Vela, especially in, quote, the biggest games. Vela was quiet in home playoff defeat to underdog RSL. Also scored on decision day, all three LA derbies, and carried the expansion side early. So Sebastian Salazar is the one who's almost coming out in this tweet saying, whoa, easy, Bob. He has performed in some big games. It's Bradley who said he wants more from Vela in the biggest games.
Can I advance a theory? Here's my theory, and this is why we came back with the Breaking Bob music. I think there's a kind of a Heisenberg-esque thing going on here for Bob Bradley, and it finally broke. Now, am I saying that Bob Bradley is cooking crystal meth? No, I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is we saw a character. You think of Bob Bradley and the shovel loads of crap he took at Swansea from the fans, from the sneering English media. You think how the dignity he held himself with. And it reminded me of the early seasons of Breaking Bad where Walter White takes all this stuff from, like, even from Hank, his brother-in-law. Oh, Walter, why don't you get out and live a little? While all the while he's keeping this secret underneath. And I think you think of the Players Tribune letter he wrote, the dignity in that letter after he got unceremoniously dumped by Swansea. And he's taken all this stuff. And finally, Seb made him crack and he revealed the Heisenberg in himself. He is the danger.
You clearly don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger.
That's my view, that this has been building and brewing underneath.
I actually feel exactly the same way. Like, I was watching that, and I was thinking to myself, so I had my those who have wronged us list. You can bet your life Bob Bradley has, like, a scroll
of
those who have wronged him.
He has built a wing onto his house just to hold that scroll.
Yeah.
It's cantilevered. You can pull it down.
And I don't even know if Seb would have been one of the people in that scroll.
I wouldn't think so, but I would think
in that moment,
the media questioning him, questioning his players. He didn't react so much to Seb's question, so much as unleash his inner building resentments towards the media on one guy. That's the way I feel.
Honestly, it's wrong. I think it's wrong that he did it. But again, that's kind of like the side issue. The actual issue is that LAFC won MLS classic.
An absolute classic. Can I just get out of this segment by saying Bob Bradley is not cooking crystal meth. Thank you. What a game. This was a brilliant game, an 8-goal thriller. I say brilliant. Brilliant in a very unique way, because I thought, even with a couple of minutes left, that the Galaxy could still equalize. Such were the chances that LAFC kept giving them up. We had the Zlatan volley that was ruled out. By the way, what a finish.
It was unbelievable, and I was so upset that it was ruled out. Not because I'm a Galaxy fan, but I wanted that game
to never stop.
Yeah.
They are enthralling games. They are the neutral. Zlatan was right about one thing after the game. No, he wasn't right. He was wrong. He said that the league will fold without him, more or less.
I mean, look, obviously that's insane. But I will say this. Please come back.
Just for this fixture alone.
Please come back. I know we've said things throughout the course of this year. Oh, you know, JJ has gone on and on. Oh, his shtick has worn thin.
It has.
His shtick, this and that. You know, I gave him the red card with the Anuha incident and with Real Salt Lake. But please come back. You make this all so much fun. You're clearly so good. It's so enjoyable to watch him play against some of these caliber of defenses.
Don't go out by grabbing your junk. Nobody needed
but
that.
But you know what? Even that, it added to the occasion of just chaos and hate between these two teams. And so even that, say it was inappropriate that, you know, you had to explain to your child what happened there or whatever. Like, fine, I get it. But even that added to the entertainment value for me with all of this. Please, please, just please think about it.
I think he is thinking about it. He's also thinking about a swan song while he still has. I think he's come back from his knee injury so fantastically well that he is not going to do another year in MLS. He wants to go out on the European stage. And honestly, Andrew, if Napoli, you got to rule out the amount of teams that can actually bring him back or will want to bring him back or will give him a shot. If Napoli are serious, a Champions League team who could do something in the latter stages of the Champions League, if they really are serious, and that is a true thing we've seen in the media, that they want him, he's got to go. He has to.
You're probably right. Maybe this time in MLS has been like kind of an audition, not just for European clubs, but also to himself. Like, oh, I'm still elite. My knee came back. I don't care how old I am. I'm Zlatan. I'm not normal.
Look, he doesn't move very much, but if you're looking for something spectacular in the last 15, 20 minutes of a game, he's just that different option.
Yeah. Also, Philadelphia Union do bow out to Atlanta United FC.
Yeah. I have some comments on that.
Oh, okay.
Okay, do you want to go or?
Well, my main takeaway was really just that Philly, like, they had the early moment where they could have scored, which maybe would have shifted the way that game went.
Okay.
But overall, like, it just didn't feel like it was ever going to happen for
them. I think the worry for anybody, and anybody is Toronto, who next face Atlanta, is that I think they're playing within themselves. I don't think they've got out of second gear in either of those games, and they haven't had to. You think about what they can do, Andrew, though. Philadelphia actually, as the New England Revs did, passed it, kept the ball really well, considering they were at that cauldron that is Atlanta's home ground. But look, one ball over the top. I know Gattis makes a bit of a mess of it, but you saw what Joseph Martinez can do. He's moving away from goal, and he just rifles one into the top corner. It's just such a brilliant finish. And I think that if Atlanta really kick into gear, which I expect they will, they'll destroy anybody in their path. Now, I think Toronto brings a different kind of challenge. I know Toronto have had a weird playoffs because they had to leave it late against DC United, who I think are a much inferior team to them.
Leaving it late.
Very late. And then
like exploding.
And then blitzing them. But their performance against NYCFC was really, really good. But I don't think they can do it again because they were so exhausted in that second half. If you're exhausted from that kind of pressing and aggression and keeping of the ball, if you're exhausted like that against Atlanta, they're going to pick you asunder. I think it could be a really good Eastern Conference final, though.
I think, and we'll say in a quick what to watch for here, that Tuesday night, 10 o'clock, is the Western Conference final between LAFC and the Seattle Sounders. The following night at 8 o'clock will be Atlanta United FC against Toronto FC. I think we've been left with two really, really good semifinals.
Yeah. And I would not go against Seattle to turn over LAFC and make Bob break completely.
Well,
Seattle have got it, Andrew.
I'll say this. I expect LAFC to win just because I have grown to hold them
in
a high regard and they're playing at home. However, I do not view this as any kind of, oh, we're LAFC, 3-0, here we go into
no.
the top. Like, I think that will be a war. And they have shown, if nothing else, they have shown a fragility in the back. And the form that Jordan Morris is in right now, I can just see him leaving some kind of imprint on this game in a very meaningful way. I think LAFC go through, but if this goes to extra time, if this even gets to penalties, I would not be surprised.
I agree completely with you, and I think a targeted direct runner like Jordan Morris could cause them problems.
They're compact defensively. We've talked about how organized they can be. They're willing to allow LAFC to hold possession, which can be dangerous because LAFC are going to get chances. Vela will find a way to pick a lock, and goals will be scored. But LA or Seattle, they are dangerous on the counter, and they have experienced players, postseason experience. Nico Ladero, Rui Diaz. Like, that's if I were an LAFC fan, I know the Galaxy that was viewed as their MLS Cup.
Oh no,
they're not home free yet.
The hard work is not done at all. Think of who you've got in the final, and then think of who you can potentially have. Toronto are more than likely Atlanta. That's brutal.
Yeah, if we do wind up with a LAFC Atlanta final, I would think that the neutral and MLS's offices would probably be pretty enthused about that. That's kind of the game that I think everyone wanted.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. That would be a showpiece final for MLS,
yeah.
And maybe they'll get it.
We do have one other final to discuss before getting out, but before that, you want to tell us something, don't you?
Yeah, Andrew, I want to talk to you about Dollar Shave Club. I can't stress enough the quality of their products, and I'm not just reading from a sheet here. I've actually used their products, Andrew. It's like a three-step process. There's the cleansing, and then there's the further cleansing, and then there's the shaving with a blade that will leave you with such a clean-cut face. It's remarkable. I've been telling everybody about it. I've sent samples to my brother.
You could use it to skin an apple.
You could.
Don't use it to skin an apple.
Please don't do that. Use it for the face. And as amazing as their stuff is, Dollar Shave Club is way more than just razors. Dollar Shave Club has you covered head to toe, Andrew. They have everything you need to shower, shave, style your hair, brush your teeth, and yes, even wipe your butt. Dollar Shave Club can keep you automatically stocked up on the products you use. You get what you want whenever you need it, whether that's once a month or a few times a year. I never have to waste time at a store wondering if what I'm getting is any good. As a Dollar Shave Club member, I know what I'm getting is the highest quality. Dylan Miskowitz. Oh, no, sorry. That's something else. Right now, you can put the quality of Dollar Shave Club's products to the test, just like JJ has. Their Ultimate Shave Starter Set is basically everything you need for an amazing shave. The Executive Razor. Ooh, Executive. So kind of like Ed Woodward. Shave Butter. Prep Scrub and Post Shave Dew. The best part is you can try it for just $5. After that, the restock box ship regular size products at regular prices. Get your ultimate starter set for just $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/offside. That's dollarshaveclub.com/offside. Dollar Shave Club, Andrew. I cannot speak highly enough of them.
There you go. Dollar Shave Club. Get it. Get it. Let's see, JJ, before we get out, there is one other game that we want to discuss. The NWSL season has come to a close.
Yes.
Congratulations. Probably not a huge surprise here, really, to anyone who has followed this along the way. North Carolina Courage, back-to-back champions. They were the best team all season long. They were clearly the best team over the weekend. 4-0, they defeat Chicago.
Yeah. I think people were hoping for some kind of, you know, a Sam Kerr blitz to keep Chicago in the game and maybe to have some kind of a classic to round off what's been a pretty amazing season in US women's soccer. But North Carolina Courage have been the best team in the league. They won the regular season and they very much won the postseason. Look, like, even if you didn't see the game, you only need to just look at who scored in it. Debinha, Jess McDonald, Crystal Dunn, Sam Mewis.
That's a good team.
It's a very good team. But even games that they lost during the season, I look back and I think it was Portland away. I remember watching that game and thinking, how are you losing this game? You are the better team. So they thoroughly deserve it. And back to back, pretty impressive.
It also marked the end of one of the great American soccer careers of Heather O'Reilly, 34 years old, playing her final professional game.
Yeah, you can give more context to that than I can, but pretty much an icon of the game and expected probably to go into the broadcast booth, maybe. I don't know. She seemed like a fairly cogent and coherent talker about the game, so maybe that happens.
Yeah.
Worth noting, Andrew, Vladko Andonovsky is set to be named the new coach of the United States women's national team at a news conference on Monday in New York. So that's today, according to the New York Times, replacing Jill Ellis. So that has not happened yet as we're recording. But I'm presuming it's going to happen if the paper of record in this city has it.
Right. He does not have international experience.
No.
Comes from NWSL, so he's certainly familiar with the player pool and those who will be on the roster.
It's massive boots to fill. If you were filling boots in world soccer
maybe,
right now.
I don't know. Yeah.
The pressure's on him straight away.
Well, the pressure's on him because they hold themselves to a standard of, you know, at the Olympics, it will be win gold. And if you don't, you failed. At the next World Cup, it will be win this. If you don't, it is a failure. So, yes, in terms of that.
He's up there with Brazilian coaches.
I've always said that the U.S. women, is like, American fans should recognize that they are the Brazil of this, of their sport. So massive shoes to fill in terms of that. But in terms of Jill Ellis, look, I thought she did a good job for this team, but you hear players, you know, there are questions about what her players thought of her. Throughout that World Cup,
the media was on her back for her selections.
Every decision she made was being criticized all the way through to the end with her hoisting the trophy. So I don't know. Maybe it's massive shoes, but
maybe
that may be an overrated feeling.
Maybe Vladko just gets an easier ride. He picks the players the media want.
Well, there you go. This was. I'm so glad that we had Pulisic and Dest to talk about and to deflect my mind from another caught offside cup failure for. For
it's not failure. Just recognize you were beaten by the best.
I do.
And beaten by me.
There's nothing left that I can say. I have no more raps to give. I have nothing. I'm destitute.
That is a perfect send-off for a podcast featuring you. I have nothing.
And the U.S. are now hardly destitute.
Oh. I'll tell you what. You are just seamless in your broadcasting style.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. This is great news, though. I'm like already now excited for the next round of CONCACAF Nations League matches.
I can't wait.
It takes a lot for me to say that.
I can't wait for Canada and Orlando. Yeah. Everybody better show up for that one.
Good stuff, man. Oh, this is great. I want people to start tweeting now about it.
America's back.
Yeah, we really, really are. It's wonderful. Hey, to you I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you later.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.